From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, a clinical psychiatrist on the paranormal. Looking forward to that. And hold on, don't fall out. We've got one heck of a ride for you tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Here's what's happening. Hurricane Michael's violence was visible in shattered Florida coastal towns. It looked like a bomb went off, where rows of homes were ripped apart from their foundations. Roofs were peeled off. Schools were ripped up by the near-record force storm that blamed for now 6 deaths. A lot of picking up to do, and condolences to the families of those 6. Russian officials are investigating the cause of a booster problem that forced the Soyuz rocket capsule to make an emergency landing just after launch. Right after I got off the air with you last night, my smartphone started binging with news alerts. It was this launch. The 2 crew members, the Russian cosmonaut and the American astronaut Nick Hague, are in good health. They're okay. They were heading for the 6-month mission on the International Space Station when their flight was aborted. Their capsule separated and landed about 250 miles from their launch site. Mike Barra, author of Dark Mission, The Secret History of NASA, with us. Mike, well, that was a tense situation, but you know what? We got to have our own rocketry here in the United States.
Yeah, we absolutely do, George. I mean, this just shows how unreliable the Russian hardware really is. I mean, this is an old Soyuz spacecraft and boosters they've been using for years. They've had 745 flights. They've had 21 failures. That doesn't seem like much, but it's 3%. And, you know, if you're flying up to the International Space Station, a 3% failure rate on your boosters is not acceptable, because it's, I mean, most of the time you do not recover the crew. Most of the time a failure like this is catastrophic.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You know, I still wonder, what are we doing on the ISS, the International Space Station? What are they doing up there?
Well, I think we're watching for aliens, mostly. I mean, it reminds me of
maybe
that old British TV show, what was it, UFO, where they had space intruder detector SID, they called it up there. I think it's kind of our version of SID. I mean, I don't know what else they're doing. They're not doing a whole heck of a lot of science. And it seems like we're at the point where either we should just build this thing out and expand it and turn it into Babylon 5 or something, or we should just give up and let it crash down to the Earth. It's one of those two, because we're at a turning point, I think. And are we going to go forward with an American manned space program or not? It's really past time for us to make that decision.
Well, we were very fortunate that we did not lose the astronaut and the cosmonaut.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks, Mike. Mike Barra, his website, his name, Mike Barra, B-A-R-A.com. Well, a story that's been all around the planet over the last several days seems to be getting even worse now. The Turkish government has told U.S. officials that it has audio and video recordings that prove that the Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi was killed inside the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, Turkey, this month. The recordings show that a Saudi security team detained Khashoggi in the consulate after he walked in on October 2nd to obtain an official document before his upcoming wedding. Then they killed him and dismembered his body. The audio recording, in particular, provides some of the most persuasive and gruesome evidence that the Saudi team is responsible for Khashoggi's death. The journalist has had long-standing ties to the Saudi royal government. He's a Saudi, but has written critically of the current government and the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who eventually will become king of Saudi Arabia. Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com, with us here. John, if it's proven that Saudi Arabia is behind this and a few of the thugs, what are we going to do about it?
Well, I don't think there's any question. Their business as usual cannot go on, George. I mean, you know, you're talking about an extrajudicial assassination of a Saudi-born but U.S. resident journalist for the Washington Post. This is an outrage beyond proportion. Mohammed bin Salman is beyond the pale. Beyond the pale. He has gone ballistic. This man will do anything and anything, anywhere, any place on the planet, if it serves his mission, consolidating power to the heir apparent of King Salman's throne. And I think the gruesomeness of this, but landing 15 Saudi, a team of of hitmen, basically an assassination squad, in the Istanbul airport. That on videotape. The videotape shows Khashoggi going into the embassy. It also shows 15 of this hit squad also going in, some of whom were forensic experts and autopsy experts.
Well, and the Turks claim they've got the gruesome death on tape, with either audio and video.
Well, what they have on tape is the recording made by personnel in the Saudi embassy.
Consulate.
That was
consulate.
Hearing screaming and a scuffle and then complete silence. So they have convincing audio evidence that the transaction that everybody suspects went on. So the Saudis are completely denying this, George, right now, saying that these are just scurrilous rumors, by the international press to discredit the kingdom. But the facts all point to a very elaborate hit by bin Salman as retaliation against Khashoggi for filing all those reports about the brutality of the war in Yemen and the crackdown that has gone on in Saudi Arabia, where he literally incarcerated the entire royal family to consolidate power within the last year. So this the U.S. officials are going to have, and there's already been calls in the Senate by Rand Paul and Lindsey Graham, basically, to stop arms sales immediately. And that's running in conflict with many of the big business interests we know that make their living on these massive defense sales to Saudi Arabia.
And by the way, nobody's brought this up yet, but was Jamal Khashoggi related at all to the late arms dealer Adnan Khashoggi?
You know, I'd have to look that up. I'm not sure about that.
I think there's some relationship there somewhere. John, thank you. It's a bizarre story. Less than a month before the U.S. midterm elections, Facebook has purged more than 800 pages and accounts as the social network clamps down on what they call inauthentic behavior. U.S. stocks whipsawed for a second straight session a day after the Dow Jones Industrial Average registered its third largest point drop in history. The blue chip index tumbled another 546 points. What is going on? In a moment, Harry S. Dent joins us. Zero Hour. Could this be it? He's next on Coast to Coast AM. Just keep your dial tuned right where it is, because we've got a great show for you tonight. Harry Dent Jr. with us for a couple hours, founder of Dent Research, which publishes the newsletters Economy and Markets, Boom and Bust, and The Leading Edge, among many others. He has an MBA from Harvard, was a consultant for several Fortune 100 companies while at Bain & Company, and lectures widely across the globe. His latest book that came out in November of 2017, Zero Hour. Harry, what is going on with the stock market, my friend?
Well, you know, George, we've been warning, for years, but especially in recent months, that we're coming into a top either right now, and now we've seen signs of that in the last few days, or if we can hold from just like 10 to 15% correction here, which we're already close to that, we may make it, into next year. But this is the greatest bubble in modern history. It has been extended by $16 trillion of free money printed since 2009, and now $1.5 trillion tax cuts from Trump, $2 trillion repatriated from overseas. This stuff just keeps piling into the stock market. It's the most overvalued it's ever been, even now more than early 2000, the greatest bubble we've seen in our lifetime, which of course crashed 78% for the tech stocks and stuff. And this could be the beginning. I've got some signs I can talk about and stuff, but this could be the beginning of it, and this is not something you want to sit through. Most of the times the stocks go up and then they correct 10 or 20%. That's fine. Most people should sit through that. I call this a great reset. This only happens once in a generation, and even more so every 90 years, like a clock, and we're coming right on that clock. And stocks can be down 70, 80, 90% and take 20 to 25 years to get back there. You do not hold through this, and you do not listen to your stockbroker at this time.
Do you buy back in when things hit the bottom?
Yeah, you know, that's the secret, George. A lot of people say, well, what do I do with my money? Well, first of all, you can be in high-quality bonds and make money, which you did all through the 1930s, the Great Depression, when everything else was down. But the biggest bonus is if you preserve your money or are in high-quality bonds making some money, or if you're really daring and you short the market a little bit, you've got money to buy things when they're down. I mean, imagine if you could buy the best companies in the world, like Amazon or Apple or whatever, or Coca-Cola for 80% off or 90% off.
Because they're gonna come back.
$700. Yeah, oh yeah, they will come back. And now we also have demographic research that will tell people which parts of the world or which types of companies will come back stronger or not. So that's an extra advantage. Gold, you know, imagine if you could buy gold at $400 to $700.
Oh,
and next time it goes to $4,000 instead of $2,000. So no, that's the real advantage when they correct this much. It happens quickly. These big corrections happen in only 2 to 3 years, and then you get to buy what my previous book was called, the sale of a lifetime. Nothing beats that. The problem is most people lose all their money, or their house goes down 50%, or their stocks go down 80%, and they don't have any net worth left to buy things when they're on
sale. That's right. Well, what are the indicators? I mean, the market the last 2 days has really taken it on the chin. What's the cause for that? Is it just panic, or what's happening?
Well, two things, and actually they both relate back to the good old Donald. Last week you saw Treasury bond yields, you know, the yields on the risk-free 10- and 30-year bonds shoot up rather dramatically, and we were predicting this would happen. We said, look, if the 30-year Treasury bond breaks above 3.2%, it's probably going to go to 4.3% in less than a year, and that's going to raise mortgage rates, and that hurts stocks because now bonds are more attractive and stock values are based on, you know, low interest rates are higher for stock values and high or lower. So, you know, that was the first thing that happened. But the second thing is you know, concerns over China. I mean, this trade war, yes, it may be a good thing to do, and China may be cheating in a lot of ways, but China has been the fastest-growing economy in the world. It's already stalling and slowing, and now it's slowing more, and the markets are concerned. Oh, my gosh, if China keeps slowing here, that's going to trigger a worldwide downturn and crash. And so it was rising interest rates and more, you know, concerns about China. Its market just broke a key point we've been talking about for the last month at 2640. You know, that doesn't sound like much, but it, you know, it was 5,500, not, you know, a few years ago. It crashed 45% in 3 months, and then it's had this kind of limp rally for years, and it's been waiting to go back down. We said, look, it breaks 2640. That's a sign that China's starting to go down again, and it did that in the last 2 days. It's at 2580 right now, so that's another sign that's something wrong. And again, that was the biggest concern. A lot of people keep thinking, oh, it's just more interest rates. No, the interest rates was the first whack. These last 2 days had a lot more to do with China, and Trump is really pushing this trade war, and it is dangerous, even though it may be a good policy in a lot of ways. And Trump has been goosing the economy with tax cuts and all this sort of stimulus and stuff, and that causes inflation to go up, which it has, and it causes growth to go up temporarily. And what is the Federal Reserve going to do? They're going to raise interest rates. That's what they do. If the economy is overheating, they raise interest rates. If it's slowing, they lower interest rates, which they've done for 9 years, which is ridiculous. And now Trump's screaming, oh, my gosh, you know, I've created this great thing, and the Trump's wrecking it. No, this was predictable. He's not, you know, he's got some, you know, gut feelings. We got to do this and that. He's not savvy at all when it comes to the consequences of things and the economic impacts. He basically is probably the prime reason for this pullback. Now, it hasn't gotten dangerous yet, but it came right to that. Yesterday's close.
Well, what happens, right, Harry, if we get a couple more days of downturns? I mean, tomorrow, if we have another 500-point drop, I mean, then will people start saying there's something wrong here?
Yes. We're just at that point. We have to remember we had a correction like this at the beginning of the year. Markets peaked in late January, real kind of like blow off top classic thing, and then that was looking like it could have been a top. We had a correction, a sharp correction, just like this. It was down about 10% to 12% in different markets, but then it stopped, and it stopped right about here, you know, where we are now. and then it kind of like went sideways and then it came back up. That's the trick, George, I've learned from when you got a bubble of this magnitude. What happens when it does finally burst, and then that's when the smart money finally says, okay, this thing's over, and they start selling and shorting the market. It happens very quickly. You'll see, and I've seen this, the last seven stock bubbles throughout history, everything from the Nikkei in the early 90s and the 1929 to 32 crash, and then every other one in the last century, including the tech wreck and recent bubbles, that first crash will be 42% on average in the first 2.5 months.
Jeez.
In other words, people get whacked. And that's the sign that that's the only way you know that the bubble has finally burst. The problem is by the time that comes, people are already in trouble and they're panicking and they get whacked hard. So, but the danger sign is if we keep going down, and literally the markets do look like they're going to open up tomorrow, but that's just a bounce after, you know, 1,400 points. It may open up 200 to 300 points tomorrow. That's nothing so far, but it is bouncing off a critical level. We've been warning our subscribers, 1,700 on the S&P 500, 25,000 on the Dow. If the market breaks that, that's the first sign that something's wrong. And yes, the markets and the traders are going to take that as a bad sign, and you'll see another steep sell-off. And then the odds keep going up that this is a top. And if it is a top, we've got not 54% like last crash. It's going to be more like 70-80% or more over a few years. And again, the first half of that crash will happen in the first 2 to 3 months typically, and that's what makes bubbles so dangerous. You know, the Rothschild guy, Baron Rothschild, once, you know, when somebody asked what was the secret to his wealth in the 1800s, I think he was the wealthiest man in the world. He said, you know, I always sold a bit early because that's how bubbles do. This is a bubble. This isn't a normal bull market that corrects in a nice staircase manner and goes down. Bubbles go up dramatically and they crash in half the time, and they crash twice as dramatically. So that's why I warn people so hard on this. This is a once in a lifetime event, and it the signs to me are building. We've been telling people, man, this looks like a top here, and if it doesn't top here, if we only get the good part is we can gauge this. If we only get a normal 10-15% or so correction by the end of the year, then we're probably good for one more Trump rally into next year before this thing blows. But right now, the odds are shifting towards it's already happening, so people should be on alert.
The 2007-2008 subprime mortgage crisis, will this be as bad as that time period?
Well, this is worse, because what's happened is that we did, and we were warning about that, George, not only decades in advance on demographics, the baby boom peaking and causing a downturn after the greatest boom in history, but also the subprime crisis was the trigger, and we also had record debt levels, I mean, around the world, but especially in developed countries. Well, what happened after the 2008-09 crash is we had a big debt bubble in emerging countries, and of course, China's been off the charts for now for 30 years, and their debt has grown 64 times just since 2000, just in the last 17, 18 years. So the low interest rates and the quantitative easing policies of central banks around the world made borrowing easy for emerging countries. Hey, developed countries too, but we were already too much in debt, so we just kind of like went sideways and didn't deleverage our debt. Emerging countries went on a spree, and they added 60 to 70 trillion more on top of 230 trillion, and now we're at 300 trillion in debt and financial asset bubbles around the world. And those are cracking. You see Turkey blowing up. You see Venezuela with hyperinflation. Iran's in trouble. China is slowing. And like I said, they have the biggest debt bubble of anybody in any time in history. And when China blows, we're going to be worse. So my view is, no, this is going to be worse than the 2008-2009 recession and stock crash, because they stopped that with massive money printing. They just literally stopped it. They just filled the tub back up with money that was draining. This time, more debt. Everything's more stretched. The emerging world is now in debt, and they always go down harder than we do, and they always have worse debt bubble crashes and stuff than we do. So this is going to be worse. So instead of, like I said earlier, instead of a 54% crash. Look for 70 to 80% stocks.
Absolutely huge. And that doesn't mean the companies are doing bad. Harry, stay with us. We'll talk about that when we come back. Harry S. Dent with us. His website is his name, Harry Dent, D-E-N-T.com. A couple of his books include The Demographic Cliff, The Sale of a Lifetime, and Zero Hour. Everett Washington, we're going to be happy there on March 23rd of next year. It's going to come up very fast. Our live stage show there at the historic Everett Theater. How do you get your tickets? Because come on by. It's going to be a great show and a meet and greet, and let's all get together and have some fun. Just go to coasttocoastam.com in the carousel reel or in the events icon at the top of the homepage. You click that, it'll take you straight to the theater's website, where you can start buying your tickets, and they are going very fast, according to Tom. So March 23rd, that's a Saturday. The show is from 5 to 8. The meet and greet is right after that. Just go to coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Harry Dent with us. Harry, so if we have quality companies that have solid earnings, they've got money in the bank, their stocks could still get hit when everybody else gets hit and they go down. But it doesn't mean that company's going to go out of business, right?
Right. Again, well, anytime you get a major downturn, a recession, or stock crash like this, some companies will get under pressure and they will go under or have to go through Chapter 11 bankruptcy or restructure. And that's a good thing. Recessions are necessary. The Federal Reserve and government see recessions as bad things. They're good things. And then you want to buy the companies that survive. You know, when we had the dot-com crash, that was a super bubble. I mean, the tech bubble took 5 years to build. But the dot-com crash came in the last year and a half, up 6 to 7 times, kind of like the Bitcoin bubble here recently, crashed, and a lot of companies went under. Well, what were the survivors? Well, companies like Apple and Amazon. If you'd have bought Amazon there, oh, my God, I was, you know, like a, you know, $150, and now it's like, you know, gotten up to, you know, $1,600 or something like that. So that's the time to buy the best companies. And you want to look at who are the strongest companies. Okay, those are the ones that are actually get the most overvalued in a bubble like this, but they also go down. I mean, General Motors in the 1929 to 32 crash went down 93%. That ended up being, that was and ended up being the greatest company in the world for decades after that. You could have bought it for nothing. So that's the secret. And the other thing is, even if the earnings of companies, if companies are so good that they keep their earnings flat instead of declining, the valuations on stocks, how many times earnings, like people will pay 30 times earnings for the typical stock right now, or 40 and 60 or 80 for the best tech stocks, those collapse just because investors get fearful. And so a stock can go down 50% even if its earnings don't decline. And then, of course, most companies' earnings do decline, so that's how they end up down 80%.
Harry, you say you have a secret indicator for looking at some of these dangers. What is that?
Yeah, you know, it's called the smart money.
You know, if you tell us, it's not a secret anymore.
Well, I know, but believe me, Wall Street won't get this anyway, so you don't have to worry. But what happened, the smart money are the people who kind of push up stuff, and when things go down, they're the ones that jump in and buy. When they see the all investors have overbought and stocks overvalued, they're the ones that short first. I mean, they're in the know. And they can even watch what all of us are doing. They're the sharks that eat all of us minnows. That's how they make money. They're the best traders and stuff. Well, you can measure this action. There's an index from Bloomberg called the Smart Money Flow Index. And what they do is the dumb money reacts in the morning, the first 30 minutes. I mean, because the biggest moves in the market come overnight. Again, the smart money, the traders have already made their positions in the futures markets. They're ahead of everything. And so the market's going to open down. It opens down right at the open, or it opens up if it's going to jump. Most of the moves are made. Well, that's when the dumb money and most people would stop or something to protect themselves. That's when those reactions are made. That's the dumb money. The smart money watches the market during the day. They can even run in and jump and test it a little bit and short it or do this. They make their positions in the last half hour into the close. So they measure, this indicator measures what the smart money's doing versus the dumb money. And the smart money has not bought this rally. In fact, they've been shorting it. They've been betting against this rally ever since it bottomed in February this year after that crash. Now, they bought into the last rally. They bought into the Trump rally. They bought into the January top early this year. But once that crash happened, they have not bought in this rally, and it's been one of the steepest declines in smart money buying, and that has been a strong warning signal to me in recent months and to our subscribers.
Are you in Puerto Rico now?
I am in Puerto Rico, and I went through a hurricane worse than Michael. I had to hold my windows from blowing out in my condo. It was so bad. It was unbelievable because the difference between Maria here and Michael, both of them similar force, but this storm hung over us for 12 to 14 hours, and Michael at least passed through. So I know what these people are going through. It is unbelievable. To watch everything. I mean, windows blowing off all around me. You know,
jeez.
You walk out the next morning and all the leaves are off trees and, you know, everything's, you know, blown over and stuff. It's just unbelievable. It's like, you know, God got angry or something, you know, and threw a temper tantrum.
What got you to move there?
Well, I moved there because I had a vacation home I've been working on for years in Culebra, which is one of the Virgin Islands, but it's in Puerto Rico. People don't know that Puerto Rico has Vieques and Culebra, two islands that are like St. Thomas and or St. Croix or St. John, and no passport to come there. It's a U.S. territory. So I was building a house there, and I was in Tampa. We'd been caretaking my wife's family for many, many years, had to move from Miami, and we were about to move back to Miami, but we're down here working on this place, spending more time in San Juan, which has gotten much better in the last decade than it was when I first started coming. And I said to my wife, why don't we move here? We're in a condo that it's a quarter of the price, a beachfront, top quality condo, a quarter of the price of South Beach, Miami, where we used to live.
Wow.
And we're now, I go around the corner from my condo to the small local airport, which I get to 20 minutes in advance. They don't even check your ID. They just weigh you to see how you're going to tilt the little.
Well, I'm not sure I like that part.
Well, it's fun. The plane, it's a 30-minute low-altitude plane flight. It's scenic. I leave my condo door and landing on this island in 1 hour. And once I got down here, I realized I could qualify for some tax advantages here, which are very compelling. I mean, anybody that trades stocks or investments for a living, and the crypto guys are coming down here because of that, and businesses that can qualify, there's real strong tax advantage. So I'm living much cheaper. I'm in a great climate. I can still fly to New York in 4 hours direct, or Miami in 2 hours, and almost anywhere in the East Coast. It's difficult if I'm coming out your way. If I have to go out to California, which I just did for a wedding,
long poke.
That's a long haul now. But I tell you, I like it down here. They've been in a recession. There's no civil unrest. It's recession for 12 years. We're about to have a civil war between blue and red factions, and we got 3.7% unemployment. They've got 12 to 15% here, and I don't see any civil unrest. So I feel good down here for now, and then I'm just going to see what happens in the next so many years.
Are the big banks down there?
Yeah. And Schwab's down here. And actually, a lot of the banks, Banco Popular and Santander, are Spanish banks because this is, by origin, more of a Spanish country. But, you know, and we've got most of the big box stores and nice malls and stuff. But there are, George, my biggest problem is a lot of people on Amazon and the Internet don't realize that you can ship here on the U.S. Postal Service. So people either just ship here because they think we're in Zimbabwe, or they charge some huge extra. And there's a lot of things, little things I used to get on the Internet free I can't find here. That's my biggest frustration. I can't find my Rao's special pasta sauce and things like that. But otherwise, man, this is a good deal. And, you know, I'm down here for other reasons, but I tell you, Americans ought to be considered retiring here. Housing in general is 60% lower. Education for people's kids is 60% lower.
And by the way, they vote in our elections. I don't know how many Americans really understand that they are allowed to vote in our elections.
Well, most important, they're allowed to freely move or immigrate. They don't have to even apply. And most Puerto Rico, a lot of young people, they get an inexpensive, good education here. The education system here is good. Then they move to the U.S. where they can make twice as much and have much better job opportunities. And then when they get older and have kids, guess what they do? A lot of the Puerto Ricans will move back to Puerto Rico to put their kids through colleges or dental school or medical school here and save a ton of money. And then sometimes, a lot of times, they'll just stay and retire here. But also, a lot of older Puerto Ricans now are moving to the United States. Why? 62% of all Puerto Ricans are in the U.S., and most of them now are moving to Florida. And so these older people realize their kids and or their grandkids are in the U.S., and they end up moving to the U.S. So the U.S. is getting highly educated, good immigrants from Puerto Rico, and Puerto Rico keeps losing people, and that's why they have these tax programs. The IRS decides, and the government decides in the U.S., it's better to help create good jobs down here through tax advantages rather than just out-and-out subsidize Puerto Rico, because the U.S. is always robbing their best people. And again, it's their more professional, educated people that are leaving, not the everyday people. So it's actually a good deal for the U.S.
So I want you to give us your best impressions on what you think will happen economically over the next year. This country seems to be mired right now, Harry, in conflict, emotion. Oh. It's unbelievable. I've never seen it this way.
Yeah.
And I think
yeah.
it's going to affect the economy one day.
Yeah, it does. It's another reason I'm kind of happy to be here and watch what's going on. This was a major theme for the first time in the Zero Hour book, that we're not just seeing a major boom peak globally and a major bubble and debt bubbles and all this deleveraging. And that's going to make the next couple of years very difficult. You deleverage debt and these bubbles burst. I mean, again, somebody's stock account is worth $200,000 one day, and then a year or two later, it's worth $50,000. You know, like, what happened? I just lost that money, and it's not coming back. This time, you know, my home was worth $300,000. Now it's worth $150,000, and I'm underwater, and I can't even refi to take advantage of the lower rates. So there's all that sort of stuff. But yes, the political polarity, the red versus blue. I mean, we've got charts from Pew Research that show just in the last 5 and 10 years that we used to have both the parties used to be more centrist, not that far apart. Now they are extreme far apart. There's the far right, there's the far left, and this is around the world, but it's the most extreme here. And Trump is playing this like a fiddle. That's why how he won. He picked off the far right and went against the centrist Republicans. And then the Republicans had to follow him because he now has the baton and he has all the power. So this is going to make this much more difficult at the social and political level. Again, down here, 12 years of recession, 12 and I think now 15% unemployment after Hurricane Maria, no civil unrest. These people just aren't like that. They're not as polarized down here. In the U.S., we are polarized. This Kavanaugh thing, it was just pure partisan. You know, the Republicans believed him and the Democrats believed her. The men believed him, the women believed her. There was no common sense, no rationality. It was just political partisanship. And the people, the Republicans, hated the Democrats for attacking this guy. And the Democrats hated the Republicans for defending him and installing this thing and cutting. And who's got all the guns in the world? We do. So this is really, I think that the social unrest in this downturn is going to top the Great Depression, where it was more people roaming around in their cars and not having housing and no jobs and soup lines. This is going to be different. People, the blue and the red extremes are going to blame each other for the crisis. The Republicans are going to say, you damn Democrats let all this debt run up and let all this, you know, free money and stuff. And the Democrats are going to say, Republicans, you didn't let us stimulate enough and blah, 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 blah. And they're going to hate each other. And so I think that's going to be the worst part of this. That we really, and I really think there's a possibility that there's going to be movements in this time, in the Civil War. I compare this more to the Civil War on the social political level. At that time, the South succeeded from the more industrial and urbanized North. They were totally different. I mean, the North was blue, the South was red. This time, especially with the Republicans in charge, I think there's going to be I think states like California or the whole West Coast or the whole Northeast is going to threaten to secede from the red states because they can't agree on anything. There is nothing that can be agreed on, and this Kavanaugh thing was the perfect example of that. No middle ground. It's either red or blue, you know.
And it's argument, and it's argument and hatred and bitterness on both sides.
And even, you know, the Democrats are always the nice guy. No, the Democrats are jumping up and down. Women, you know, almost assaulting, you know, senators and in the elevator and stuff. This, everybody, yeah, there's very high tensions. And I tell you, I don't feel that here. And it's another advantage to being Puerto Rico. I'm kind of like watching on the sidelines to see what happens. And then if I do decide to move back to Florida, where I'd probably move back to because we're familiar there and know everybody, you know, I will do it when I can buy a condo there for a quarter of the price now. But I want to see what happens first. And the thing about it, the next year also, George, is this is when it's going to, you know, it's going to happen or not. It's either starting to happen now or at the latest, by my calculations, with every cycle we have and everything we got at our disposal, it's going to start by late next year. And that's going to be a 90-year anniversary of the greatest stock crash in modern history, 1929-32. And that is one of many of our cycles we cover in Zero Hour. And in our newsletters, the 90-year cycle is the most powerful for the biggest, what I call, you know, downturns, depressions, and the biggest stock crashes. And this has happened every 90 years since the Industrial Revolution caused the greatest boom in global history.
Well, you know, Harry, I've had a couple guests on who say very similar things to what you're saying. Their timing was off. Some of them said things were going to happen back last September. You know, there was one fellow who was talking about Jewish prophecy, and he called it the Shemitah.
Oh, yeah, I remember that guy, yeah.
But it didn't happen. It didn't happen then, but it could happen now, you're saying.
Well, yeah, I mean, we were in the same position. We were coming into 2016. The market had gone sideways for you. We were saying, you know, this looks like it may finally top. And then Trump got elected. I mean, we turned bullish. I mean, when Trump had that surprise win and the markets had a 2,000 point reversal from down 900 to up 1,100 just overnight and into the morning. I said, look, this is a reversal. This is a tax cut coming and all this sort of stuff. This is going to extend this boom another year or two, another 20-30% or more. And that's what's happened. But now we're on the other side of that. Now we've seen most of that. And we're running out of tricks. I mean, what can you do now? And the Democrats may win the House, it looks likely, possibly the Senate, but it's going to be much harder for Trump to push his gravy train for businesses as the Democrats get more control. And I see the economy falling apart by 2020 at the latest. And that's
hard
to win re-election.
I was just going to say.
I don't think Trump gets reelected, and he may not even make it. We're tracking Watergate on a 45-year cycle almost to the T, which would say you're about to see the special prosecutor get fired after elections early next year, and Trump could be in trouble by late next year. So either we're peaking now, or at best, if Trump holds on and no disaster, we're going to peak late next year and see the greatest crash in history. I don't see any other two options. I don't see this bubble lasting past the end of next year, but there's a 50-50 chance it's happening now, and you don't want to get hit by that first 40%.
Do we know what's happening with overnight stocks? I mean, can you tell what could happen when the clock opens tomorrow?
Yes. China went down a little bit, and China made the biggest, was the only stock market that violated a critical point yesterday. It went down some more, but came back up to even, but it's still violated. But the U.S. markets look like the Dow's going to open up 200-300 points tomorrow. Now, that's minor compared to 1,400 points over just the last
day. That's true. Stay with us, Harry. We're going to come right back. We'll talk more and take phone calls with you next on Coast to Coast AM.